From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Selling yourself is a dangerous game, Nellie. Who's going to look after you now Norman's gone?
I can look after myself.
You're better off going back to work for Tilly Devine. At least you'd have some protection. Better off still if you went home.
I'm having fun.
Anna McGann is an Australian actress in the clip you just heard. She's playing the role of Nellie Cameron, a 1920s prostitute in the Australian television series Underbelly. Now, I actually haven't seen this series, but from what I've heard, it's a pretty intense and confronting role. In fact, the real-life Nellie Cameron was kidnapped, beaten, stabbed and shot multiple times. And she was known as the Kiss of Death Girl because most of her boyfriends and husbands were murdered.
While this is the role she's probably best known for, Anna has built up an impressive body of work since she started in the industry. You might recognise her from popular Australian TV shows like House Husbands, Anzac Girls, the Dr. Blake mysteries. And while she was doing all of this, Anna was experiencing a pretty significant shift herself. Away from the eye of the camera, she was going through a profound spiritual change, and no one was more surprised about that than she was.
Last year, we sent our producer Karen Tong to an event in Melbourne called the Justice Conference. Anna was speaking and performing there, and Karen had the chance to catch up with her between sessions.
The music starts, but the stage is pitch black.
The sun has never risen in my lifetime.
The sun has never risen in my lifetime.
A male voice speaks first, then a female voice. And as they start speaking, their faces are illuminated with a white light, mimicking the glow from the screen of a smartphone.
In the beginning, there were two worlds, one called day and one called night.
People would say that during the day...
I can recognise Anna McGann from the episodes of House Husbands that I've seen. But watching Anna perform The People of the Sun with spoken word poet Joel McCarrow, they actually wrote this piece together, it feels like I'm seeing her in her element.
We see nothing and we are not seen.
We have secrets.
I know nothing and I'm not known.
I have secrets.
The sun has never risen in my lifetime.
Start recording.
I got to speak with Anna backstage after the performance, and I told her that she strikes me as someone who has always been an actor.
It's weird because I was the kid that put on plays and I was aggressive. I would make everyone do a play, no matter if we were hanging out with family friends. However, I was much more interested in science and I was interested in dance and I wanted to be an author and I wanted to be an astronomer and a journalist and all this stuff. And I didn't really consider acting at all. I'd never really tried it. Didn't do it in high school. I thought it was for people that were...
Anna didn't even consider acting after high school. She started a degree in psychology before finally giving in and switching to a degree in fine arts. At the time, it felt like a bold move, but it's paid off. Right after she graduated, Anna managed to land major roles in Australian TV shows like Underbelly, House Husbands and Anzac Girls, and she won the Heath Ledger Scholarship as well back in 2012. But even with all this success, there was something uncomfortable about it.
I don't think I had ever expected to be working in the capacity that I do. I'm incredibly grateful for it. But it was surprising, both to me and everybody around me. And not because it was like, oh, we didn't think you were gifted. It just, I guess from an early stage, I wasn't certain how I could make it my priority. And I really wanted to write. And so I suppose that I had been tentative from the beginning not to put all of my eggs in that basket. There's something, and there still is something about the profession that I don't feel completely at home in. I think before you get into the industry, it is idolized to a degree because it feels impenetrable. And so once you sort of overcome that hurdle and you're in it, you're like, okay, here we go. And there's this point, I guess, where everybody that I met would look at me through the lens of the character they knew me to be. I had this moment where I was like, okay, who am I at the core? Because I'm actually not liking some of the stuff that I'm seeing. It's not that pretty. Like beneath the surface, there's some ugly stuff going on. I'm not being good to the people I'm in relationships with. I'm not being faithful in these other things. I'm why am I crying myself to sleep at night? These elements that come up and you can put a paper over the top of it, but at some point, you've got to get in there and have a look.
So Anna went searching for answers, and she found them not only where she least expected to find them, but also where she least wanted to find them.
I'd been trained in a liberal arts education. I had come from the LGBT community. I had come from a group of people that had felt so rejected by the church. And I personally felt so rejected by the church, never had anything to do with them. Had never really experienced oppression like some people had, but it felt institutionalized to me. I felt like the feelings that I had, or whatever I was coming up against, I blamed the church quite automatically. And I used to walk around and say, I don't judge anyone except for Christians.
But then Anna says she had this friend who was a Christian and she just didn't get it. She kept asking herself, how could someone so intelligent believe something so stupid?
And I realised that whatever I felt oppressed by, he didn't seem to be partaking in that, because he did come towards me and my lifestyle and everything I thought and did, and we talked about this stuff, just from this total position of love. And so when I just got really, really curious and frustrated because my worldview was being turned on its head a little bit. And I had pride in that worldview. I felt quite righteous in it. And so to have that shifted and go, no, I need to sort this out for myself, it was super challenging.
I mean, obviously you've changed your view.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. But what was it that you found so compelling about Christianity, or perhaps even the Bible?
Someone had invited me to church and I visited. And I had what you'd have to call like a very spiritual experience. And I'd had spiritual experiences before that were not related to Christianity at all. So I was open to them, but I was surprised that I had one there. And I was surprised at how good it felt. It felt really pure. And I just knew I was safe, which I hadn't expected. I had expected to feel judgment. And so I'd gone as this experiment and went away quite shaken up. And it was after a couple more experiences like that, that I sort of got to this point where I was like, nope, stop. I'm being brainwashed. I'm clearly buying into emotional manipulation. I'm clearly buying into a thing. I'm putting the brakes on right here. I'm too smart for this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read the Bible. I will see for myself the parts that I know to be in there that are just against me and against really my worldview, and I'll put this to rest. And so I took the Bible and I started reading the New Testament, and I think that the turning point for me was reading about the person of Jesus was highly unexpected. It rattled me, because what I had thought was a system positioned way up high here and little me down here being told, you don't get to come in because you don't fit the mold. I had Jesus standing on my side with me saying, I'm not interested in that hypocrisy. I'm not interested in that judgment or that legalism or that religion. I'm with you. I just want to spend time with you. We're just going to hang out here together, and I'm going to talk you through your mess. It's hard to explain. Like, if you haven't grown up in the church, no one has ever said words to you like, you are the light of the world. There's beautiful things in scripture. And it was reviving. And I felt so... I was like this... this little kid that was just, and I wasn't that young, but like, I was like this secret Bible reader that was walking around going, Jesus is on my side. You Christians don't get it. He's with me. Like, he gets me. And I sort of had this, like, at first it was just started, it was Anna and Jesus. And then I sort of came to this point where I was like, if I believe in this, and I really, by the stage, it was just, I think it got something in me where I had always really hoped that I could be somebody that would give something good to the world, that would actually contribute. And I was desperately afraid that I was sort of the rock dragged behind that hadn't really contributed much, but you know, some half popular television. And I know it sounds sort of comical, but you start to really realize the emptiness of that stuff when you get there. Artistry, incredibly valuable. Creativity, profoundly so. And television is too. Television's important, but you don't just get worth by climbing up this ladder. It's so internal. It comes from deep in the ground. It comes from this bottom place. I didn't have that foundation. And for something, it just healed me. And I was over this two-week period, and I'd had an eating disorder for about 10 years, and I got radically healed of it. I just had this... I woke up and had this worth that I had never experienced before.
Wow.
So great. Every part of my heart that needed something, it was filling. So unexpectedly, I was like, it has consequences. If this is true, it will change the whole world. And I don't understand why no one's told me about him before.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith.
I solemnly pledge myself before God to practice my profession faithfully and devote myself to the welfare of those committed to my care. The Florence Nightingale pledge. Agnes, we all took it.
That was Anna McGann as Sister Olive Haynes from the Australian miniseries Anzac Girls. In her conversation with our producer, Karen Tong, Anna describes how having a Christian faith has changed the way she approaches acting and the entertainment industry.
If you want to work, the idea is, oh, you just hide that part of your life and, like, you be really meek and just, you just keep that private life private. And I felt weird about that. Because it wasn't authentic, and if I'm going to act and I'm going to play humanity in the roles that I play, I really need to be honest about it. And so I started this practice of really just openly talking about it and trying to find Christians too and bring them out of their hiding holes, basically, and encourage them and in turn allow them to encourage me to actively live out our faiths in our industries in a way that looked practical, in a way that looked like serving and helping one another, that looked like helping one another up, making another person more important than we are, and not idolizing this prize, but actually using that position, if we were given any platform at all, for goodness.
Anna calls this the inverted kingdom concept. Basically, it flips the logic of starting at the bottom and climbing your way to the top on its head. It says instead, to get to the top, you've got to go to the bottom. It's about descending, getting low, and serving others.
It's so in contrast to everything that the entertainment industry is. It's all about you keep climbing. You climb that ladder of success. You elbow your way. You step on people's shoulders. You just do what you have to do. Otherwise, no one's going to notice you. And the Christian faith says, well, God notices you, and God knows you, and God will provide everything you need, so don't worry about that stuff. Focus on the people that are suffering around you, and focus on tending to their needs, and get as low as you can, because that is the highest position any human can hold. That's crazy. And so when you apply that to the industry, very interesting things start to happen.
Other things started to change for Anna, like the roles she was choosing.
I went from doing, you know, Underbelly and playing this prostitute, and man, I don't regret that. That was an incredible experience. But I don't do nudity anymore. And really, it's not this. I don't just play Christians. Like it's this thing where you're really looking at the essence of a story. You're looking for beauty and you're looking for excellence, but you're also looking for something that you can give yourself to fully. And I knew that I was in a restorative process with my body. I wasn't in a exposing process with my body. So I was like, okay, that's gone. But I've been so blessed to be able to do these jobs that have allowed me to sort of be in the industry and around people that have really like been open to me processing and expressing my faith, not proselytizing, just being, allowing me to be a Christian around them and allowing that normalcy and having that respect and then giving the respect back to them. And so from there, really feeling the burden to not only be part of those stories, but start to write and create stories, not fiction stories, but really seek out stories of people that are marginalized and bring them to the light, this concept of speaking up.
What's the next story that you want to tell, that you want to write?
A couple of years ago, I spent time when I was shooting Anzac Girls at this Salvation Army mission, and I was there because I was suffering and I just needed to be around people, and so they like took me in as a volunteer, but they sort of like took me in as well. And so I would volunteer there just once a week, and then sometimes during the week I'd go to like the officer's house and just hang with their families, and they all had some of the most extraordinary stories I'd ever heard. And I was deeply moved, like spending my Saturday nights just playing Scrabble with these homeless guys that were beating me. And I ended up going back there and interviewing them and basically doing like oral histories with them and recording them for like 2 hours at a time telling their stories, some of the volunteers, some of the patrons and some of the leaders, and sort of came away with hours of these interviews, of these stories.
I don't want you to give anything too much away or anything, but like if there's one that you can sort of tell me about.
I had my imagination and just my heart really captured by the church as a whole, because they have this homeless church as part of it. And I was there all these different weeks, but 1 week a woman got up, and she got up and she said, "Praise Jesus, I haven't taken heroin for 7 days." And her name was Nikki, and she and her boyfriend Bill were homeless, and they'd sleep on the steps of the Salvation Army every night, curled up, spooned up together. And she was in love, and she was a prostitute, and she was a junkie, and she had breast cancer, terminal breast cancer. But she just had this vigor about her where she was like, "I know Jesus, and I'm gonna be okay." And I was so intrigued by her, and I really wanted to interview her, and I didn't get to, but I kept following her story. And she'd come out. 1 week we came, and her boyfriend had tried to stab someone because she'd whispered in one of the officer's ears. And what she'd actually been telling the officer is that she had bought a wedding dress from one of the op shops so she could get married to him, but her boyfriend thought that she was cracking onto someone, so he lost it. She ran away and she disappeared. I remember they had this prayer vigil for her because they know them so well. And that's the beauty of these ministries, is that like people that are not given status as people are deeply humanized, you know, they're given their dignity. And of course, like, so her family, her Salvation Army family were like, "We don't know where she is." They had a prayer vigil. And the very next morning, first thing in the morning, they get a call from her, and she's at a train station in Perth. And she was about to kill herself, and God stopped her. And they bought her a plane ticket back, and she came back. And just, it's stories like that. And it's people's personal stories of their hardship, but also their victory. And I would always ask them, you know, ask them about the terror of their lives, but ask them about the joy, not knowing if they'd really have much to say because their lives are so difficult. And they would always come up with the most poetic and beautiful things I'd ever heard.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Simon Smart and Natasha Moore. Thanks today to our producer, Karen Tong, who interviewed Anna McGann at the Justice Conference last year. If you're interested in hearing more from Anna, she'll be at the same conference again this year. It's in Melbourne. And for all the details, go to thejusticeconference.com.au.
Listen to this interview again or share it with a friend. Find it on our website, publicchristianity.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just type Life and Faith in the search box and hit subscribe. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating or review. It helps other people discover our show.
Next week, look at the stars and beyond with astronomer and expert on the entire universe, Dr. Luke Barnes. We'll see you then.